Edition of Locked On Knicks. I am Alex Wolf. He is Gavin Shaw. We are coming to you not live, but you know, we're coming to you over your airwaves, your Wi-Fis, your networks, all that good stuff. Bringing you the second part of our mailbag that we took questions for you guys from over this past week. We've got some great questions today. The first one is going to be about starting the Knicks from scratch, despite the fact that I feel like most Knicks fans probably feel like the Knicks are in good shape right now. I think anybody would take the opportunity to start from scratch and pick their own favorites. So we're going to talk about who our favorite or who our ideal owner, GM, coach, and starting player would be if we were starting the Knicks from scratch.
Sorry, it cut out for a sec.
Oh, okay. Should I probably
I can just roll through and
I would assume it's all right. Yeah, I just ended with we would talk about what we would do if we were starting the Knicks from scratch.
And okay, 3, 2, 1, and then we're getting into our guilty pleasures. A great question. Players that we irrationally liked or were embarrassingly appreciative of, and then the opposite end of the spectrum, stars that we didn't enjoy that much.
And then finally, we're going to end with a long-term question leading, you know, up to the summer. If the Knicks get KD and Kyrie, do we think that they would package some of the young guys on the team and try and add a third star? So we'll get into that when we get into Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox fouled from behind. Count it at one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives.
Becomes infectious.
All right, welcome in everyone to Locked On Knicks Saturday edition. Taking you guys through the weekend, something to listen to while you're mowing the lawn or taking the kids to soccer or, well, I guess it's more like baseball this time of year, taking the kids to baseball practice, you know, whatever it is you happen to be doing on this Saturday or Sunday, we're happy that you're spending it with us. So we're getting into part two of our mailbag here. We had a nice round of questions from you guys as per usual. You guys are all great with supplying those questions for us to answer. Certainly gives us something to talk about during these kind of doldrums of the off season before the lottery, where there's not too much to talk about as far as the Knicks are concerned. So our first question comes to us from Bugsy Sig, at Bugsy Sig on Twitter. Shout out to Bugsy, as always, a longtime commenter on Posting and Toasting, my favorite blog on the Knicks web universe for obvious reasons. He says, you're starting the Knicks from scratch. Pick your choice for owner, GM, coach, and one current player to start the franchise with. Bonus for the celebs sitting courtside, hashtag alternate universe, hashtag Marvel 616. So we even got a Marvel alternate universe reference in here as well, which is awesome. So Gavin, I'll let you lead this one off because I found your answers to be pretty entertaining for this.
All right. I appreciate that. All right, so owner, I don't know. How can you not pick yourself? Like, I dream of owning an NBA team. It is very unlikely to happen, so I'll take this alternate universe version of myself to live that out. I'm owning the Knicks. No one's getting thrown out because we're going to be great because I get to pick every single aspect of this team. So no one's going to shit on me when I'm walking by, and I won't be in a stupid band. I won't call people who criticize me alcoholics. I'll come up with something more appropriate and accurate to come back at you. And it's going to be great. All right.
Now, Gavin, are you at all worried that just by becoming owner of the Knicks, maybe it would be like a cursed object that, like, just like being in it, you would like all of a sudden start being like James Dolan? Like, you'd start getting all like hunchbacked and like, you'd like have kind of like that weird, like scowly smirk on your face all the time. And like, you'd suddenly have the urge to start a stupid band and you wouldn't know where it was coming from. And then like soon you'd start calling everybody alcoholics and it would just be coming out like involuntarily. Like maybe the Knicks are just a cursed mantle. like maybe we've reached that point now.
Yeah, you're almost talking me out of it. I'm gonna assume the alternate universe maybe precludes that from happening, but I don't know. It's an important. I'm glad you bring it up because I'm a little bit more wary now. For now, I'll own the Knicks. If I wake up one day looking and talking like Dolan, we can talk it over. All right, my GM and coach. I just maybe this will be a little distasteful for Knicks fans, but I just went with the Warriors pair of Bob Myers and Steve Kerr. For GM, there are certainly like a lot of good options, including the guy you picked, who I won't spoil, Alex. I thought a lot about Masai Ujiri, who just seems like he's like such like I think like a savage would be like the right word. Like he just like always like seems to maximize the efficiency of his team and does so in a way that like doesn't always take his players into account, but I think he strikes a balance like well enough that like he's still like functional and like at least as far as I know, Kyle Lowry doesn't love him, but like it doesn't seem like he's universally hated in Toronto. He's really really good, and there are obviously like a lot of quality GMs throughout the league. Daryl Morey, RC Buford. I went with Bob Myers because I really just enjoy his personality. I like him whenever he's on podcasts, and did a brilliant job. I think he's responsible for drafting all three of Steph, Clay and Draymond, and then getting KD to sign, trading for Andre Iguodala. So he's just done a great, great job there. And I just enjoy him from a personality perspective. Steve Kerr, very similar. My favorite, along with Greg Popovich, I'd even put Kerr ahead of him. I think my favorite, like, human being in the NBA, maybe, period. I just think, like, genuinely, like, well-intentioned, like, kind dude and a heck of a coach on top of it. For my player, I went with Giannis. He's like my age. He's like 23, 24. And you can certainly make a case. Like, I think I'd still, just because of the shooting issues, like, take guys like Harden and KD and, like, maybe Steph, like, slightly ahead of him for, like, a single, like, series. But he's obviously just a monster on both ends. And he seems like, despite the lack of shot, totally unstoppable. And still young enough that, I think you can kind of count on his athleticism sticking around for another 6-7 years. I did think about Luka Doncic here just because he's even younger and I think his game is going to age spectacularly. Like if you could sign me up for like 15 years of any player in the league, I think I'd say Luka, but I don't have quite enough faith in my ownership to assume we'd keep a star player for that long. So Giannis will have to do.
Yeah, I definitely like Giannis as well. It's tough to argue with him, but I could see taking Luka as well. But, I'm gonna just jump right into my choices. It's funny. I actually wrote an article when there was like the obviously stupid rumors about Dolan selling earlier this year. I kind of made like a PNT article about who I would want to buy the Knicks, and it took like suggestions from people. And my favorite one was Dizas and Mero. I mean, as cool as it would be for it to be me, I'm trying to not make this all about me. Cause I don't know if I would even be that entertaining of an owner. Like I'd probably be a jackass and not in the way that Dolan is to the fans, but I would be like on Twitter, like going on rants and shit and like drunk with power in that sort of way. I don't know if I'd be perfect for the role of owner, but I went with Dizas and Mero because I think they'd be very entertaining, and that would be the first thing. There would be like a duality to them. Hopefully this would not like tear them apart. It would allow them to keep working in the beautiful symbiotic relationship that they already work with on the TV show. So it would be fun. They're like New York to the core. Yeah, I don't really think there's too many celebrity Knicks fans that are like truly bigger Knicks fans than those two dudes are. And they're just hilarious. And on the Twitter side of things, they would keep their heads, but they would also talk smack on Twitter, but it would be hilarious. And they would start all kinds of beefs with every team in the league. And it would be phenomenal. The Knicks would be like, I mean, not that I'm a Yankees fan, but the Knicks would kind of be like the Yankees were for a long time and maybe kind of still are, of just like the team that the fans love dearly and everybody else in the league just despises with a burning passion. And I think it could be kind of fun in that respect. So they're my ownerships. But then obviously I would want them to appoint somebody who could for sure be a good GM because I don't want Dizas and Mero actually making personnel decisions, considering I know for a fact that like based off their show and stuff, they still worship the ground the Melo walks on and would probably sign him to a max contract. I don't think I want that at this stage. So no offense to Melo. I think he could still maybe break his way into the league if he finally accepts a lower role. but I don't see that happening, and I don't want him signed to a big deal. So, without rambling too much, I want to sign Jerry West to be my general manager, who I know is getting up there in years, but the dude is like the ageless wonder of team building. He managed the Memphis Grizzlies for a long time and built kind of that Pau Gasol, James Posey, Jason Williams squad there that they had for a while that was consistently in the playoffs and, you know, always in good shape, it seemed like. And you know, it's, even if they didn't necessarily like, you know, win titles or any of that stuff, they still did some pretty damn good stuff. He was part of the Lakers during the 90s and, you know, obviously helped, get Kobe Bryant there, signed Shaq. He was, you know, great to those teams as well. And then more recently, he was with the Golden State Warriors from 2011 to, 2017, I think was when he left. I think he went straight from the Warriors to where he now is with the Clippers. And he's not technically like president of basketball operations or GM or anything with those two teams, but he's like an executive board member on both of those and apparently has a lot of say in personnel and has for the current iteration of the Golden State Warriors and the current iteration of the Clippers. And so the guy definitely knows how to scout talent and build a great team. And he's done it from era to era to era with, you know, basically like seamless transition. So he's my guy as far as that's concerned. For coach, I was a little, I probably cheated a little bit, but you know what? I'll say that I prefer it one way, but if this question demands that it be current, people, I would say I want 1998 Greg Popovich so that we can have the sustained success that is Greg Popovich. But if it takes taking the current iteration, I'll just take him as he is right now at whatever age he is. I don't know or care what age he is because I know that he could probably still coach another like at least 5, 6, 7 years, lay down a great foundation. And yeah, so I want Greg Popovich because there's no coach in the NBA that can, you know, maintain greatness the way that he can, no matter what players are on the court for him. And then finally, as far as the player, I'm definitely cheating with this because it says current NBA player. I'm just going to fast forward 6 months and say, I want Zion Williamson. Like, screw the rules. I just want Zion. That would be my guy to start the franchise with. There's no current player that I look at and I'm like, I think I'd rather have him in his current form than a barely 19 years old Zion Williamson as a rookie on a rookie contract and all that good stuff. So I'm going with Zion. I'm fast forwarding this question a couple months because that's the guy I got to go with.
Yeah, we were getting into it with Ricky a little bit the other day. I think the Zion versus Luka conversation is an interesting one, and I'm really fascinated to see how it works out in the NBA. I have a slight preference for Luka just because of how skilled he is offensively, and I'm not like doubtful of it or anything, but I'm interested to see how Zion's game offensively translates into the NBA, where he's obviously like this incredible athlete and he's really smart and he certainly has some game on that end. And like even at the NBA level, like he's just gonna like blow people away with like his physicality and his strength and his speed. But he is like, I mean, like skill set wise, like he certainly is not in like the same universe as like a Luka right now. So I wonder how far that comes along and how quickly that comes along. And like, I guess like the flip side of that is like you have to consider like Zion's going to be a monster on defense while someone like Luka isn't. And then like Giannis, you can say is sort of like maybe like Zion's like upside and like Giannis is like a few years older. So you'd prefer Zion, but I guess like I would prefer like the just how certain Giannis is. But I think there's like at least like in my mind, like I think I'd probably have like Zion third, though. Again, you can certainly make a case for a couple other guys.
Yeah, I think like, I mean, it's, I worry in like a strange way that it's possible that the current version of Giannis that we're seeing could potentially be just kind of where he levels out to be. Yeah, which seems absurd to say because he's been improving so much over all the years. But I think it's entirely possible that this could be like his peak form and he'll just kind of maintain this for a number of years. Kind of like when LeBron did that. You know, like LeBron kind of by like age 23 was already you know, kind of at the form that we saw him in for the rest of his years in Cleveland before he left for Miami. And then you could argue he definitely, like, he got a little bigger then, like, physically and you know, muscle-wise, and sort of dominated in a certain way that he hadn't before. And then eventually he added the three-point shot later on, which still isn't perfect for LeBron. I just feel like maybe we're at that point with Giannis, whereas, like, Zion, I think, you know, it's – funny, you bring up when we were talking with Ricky the other day, he mentioned that Zion, he could see him as potentially a primary ball handler or damn near to it. And there are times this year where you looked at him on Duke and he wasn't asked to do that all that much, but his passing ability is fantastic and it's really underrated, you know, because you kind of get blinded by the highlight dunks and the steals and blocks and the, you know, all the drives to the rim and all that stuff. And I really think his passing is great though, and he can thread the needle like a lot better than I think people realize if you just look for them. And so I think he has the potential to be like the all around superstar, in the NBA at some point, but obviously it's no sure thing. But I just think everything all combined, you know, with the rookie, the year one rookie contract, his upside, his age, everything else, he would be the guy I'd want to start with, like, bar none.
Yeah, no, I think it's certainly an interesting debate. Either way you want to go, I think you can. And just from a pure entertainment perspective, like, there'd be almost nothing like Zion and MSG. Like, I think Luka and Giannis are in that mix because Giannis is just the same type of athlete, and like Luka just had the propensity for making like those just like amazing, like, mind blowing plays that like own, like he's almost like he does have a little like Steph Curry.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of scratchy feedback.
Okay, well I'll start that over.
Okay.
Let me mark the time down. I'm learning my lesson because I was end up spending like an hour like so at 1:40. Yeah. All right, I'll come back in 3, 2, 1. Yeah, no, I mean, it's certainly an interesting debate. I think also just from like a pure entertainment perspective, I mean, Zion is about as good as it gets. And like, if the Knicks actually end up getting him, like we're going to see that, and it's going to be such a treat. But I think you could also put like Luka and Giannis in that same mix to a degree, just because Giannis is like the same type of athlete, if not even better, because he's the same type of athlete at 4 or 5 inches taller. And Luka in the Garden would have just been like, I hate when I always talk about this because I love him and it's really masochism. But he really has like a step like propensity for making amazing shots. So I think he'd be a lot of fun in the Garden too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can't go wrong entertaining. I mean, we're literally talking about like three of the absolute best possible young building blocks in the NBA right now. So any one of them, you'd be hard pressed to be like, nope, that's a bad choice. It's just kind of like splitting hairs to figure out which one's your favorite. But at any rate, I think we could probably wrap this one up and head into our first break. And then we'll come back and we're going to talk about some of our favorite guilty pleasures of players that have played for the Knicks over the years. So we'll get into that when we get back to Locked On Knicks.
All right, welcome back. Part 2 of the Locked On Knicks mailbag. Just a little housekeeping. If you missed it, we had Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation on this week. Split that into two parts, asking him a lot of the same questions as we did Jonathan Wasserman, and he went in some different directions. I think gave some really interesting insights on Zion Williamson. Was sort of talking about how when you draft a guy like Zion, you got to take into account not only where the NBA is now, but where it will be going forward, and how he'll fit in on the defensive end, and maybe an NBA with even better athletes in a couple years. And we touch on some other really intriguing aspects of this year's draft, some secondary guys the Knicks could get in, and it's fun having on different dudes. Him and Wasserman both have their guys in the top 10 they really like, and there's some overlap too. Yeah, they even had your guy, both of them had your guy, Brandon Clark, pretty darn high, Alex. So that was, I'm sure, vindicating for you. We hope you all listen to that. And then remember, this is part 2 of our mailbag. In case you missed it, we dropped part 1 yesterday. It's a lot of fun as well. So please check that out. And finally, we hope you are listening on the Himalaya Podcast app. They have a great feature that allows you to go to sleep listening to podcasts. So if you are like me and you have insomnia and you have a lot of issues de-stressing at night and going to bed, let our dulcet tones take you home. Or I think what I'm going to start doing, if you find me anxiety inducing, which I think is possible, I think it comes out at points. I think I'm just going to release an all Alex version of the podcast where I just cut myself out and I delete all my audio and it's just you talking and then long periods of silence and then you talking again. we can see people like that. Maybe some people, some weirdos, some freaks out there want an all Gavin version and we can like triple our listeners this way.
Yeah, I hope I'm not putting people to sleep, but we definitely have different voices and mine's like the, I guess the more smooth jazzy version, I guess, but I wouldn't want to be putting people to sleep regardless. That would make me feel weird, even if it was intentional. But at any rate, how about we get into our question from Mr. Johnny Caps here?
Johnny Caps asks, who are your favorite Knicks of all time who could be considered guilty pleasures, players you have an irrational or embarrassing appreciation of? And then on the flip side, how about any stars who you never really liked like most Knicks fans do? So that's from Johnny Caps at Johnny Caps 17. All right, so let's start off on the positive, Alex. Who are some of your guilty pleasures over the years?
I think my number one, and I mean, obviously, like, this was a player that a lot of people liked, so I don't know, like, just how guilty it was, but J.R. Smith was for sure a guilty pleasure for me, because even when his play kind of fell off, like, following the 12-13 season, I was still, like, ride or die with J.R. Smith, like, right up until the point when he started untying players' shoes for shits and giggles, that sort of was finally my falling off point, and it probably was for a lot of people. But like prior to that, like I always found JR to be fun, and I don't care if he was kind of a chucker. He was just kind of one of my favorite dudes to root for.
Yeah, no, he's a delight. I mean, he was just such a personality. Like I think like even since he's been on the Knicks, like I consider him a guilty pleasure. There just aren't that many guys willing to throw soup at another dude. So I will always give him a lot of credit for that. And I think I like so much of my basis of loving the NBA is just kind of the characters you get. And I know, I mean, you can watch Hard Knocks, like there are these guys in like other sports, but like the NBA, for whatever reason, it's like a unique brand of just like lunatics a lot of the time. And then the other side of that is just like guys who are really thoughtful and like really like genuinely great people. And there's such a good mix. It's just a great sample size of human beings. Anywho. My first guy was, Amari Stoudemire, but after year one, when everyone turned on him, because obviously everyone liked year one Amari, particularly like first like 40 games of the season Amari, because he was just a monster. I just always had hope in him. Like I remember like when he came back for the 2012-13 playoffs, I really, in my mind, I was so convinced that he was going to be the guy who pushed the Knicks over the edge. And took a team that was already really good and just kind of would have been like an off the bench presence and, really made all the difference for them and allowed them to make the finals, which obviously did not end up happening. But, yeah, I don't know. I was still into him and I never really gave up hope until like the final like year or two of Amari.
Yeah. I was in the same camp. Like I can even remember in like 12-13 thinking like, oh, when Amari comes back for the playoffs, like Knicks are going to be dope. Even though in reality, like, Amari coming back actually kind of killed the Knicks because Woodson insisted on playing the like three big lineup instead of putting Melo out there at the four, which is what worked all year. But yeah, I was always an Amari guy too. And you know, he kind of developed his own quirks as time went on, with the wine baths and all that good stuff and like refinding his Jewish heritage and all that. He was an odd dude and was generally just kind of fun.
Oh yeah. I didn't get to mention this on the last part, but I texted you about it. I found out my cousin who just spent a year in Israel, who does not follow basketball, and she has probably no idea who it is, but she saw Amari Stoudemire and she like remembered reading that there was like a former NBA player who became or converted to Judaism, and she just goes running up to him and she's like, are you the guy who played basketball who became Jewish? And he kind of sticks out like a sore thumb in Israel, and he's like, yes, I am. And that was the extent of it, but I thought that was pretty cool.
That's really funny. I guess like the only thing with Amari that it's hard to overlook, but he's made some problematic homophobic comments over the time when he was in the league and since he's been out of the league. I just try to write that up to upbringing or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's not great. But, you know, whatever. I mean, just strictly on the court, I always wanted him to do well after that first year. My next guy, I don't know how guilty this guy was, but it was like a dude that I would run through a brick wall for. It was Steve Novak. I mean, I freaking love Steve Novak. And, you know, I'll throw Chris Copeland in there too, because they're kind of the same class of player. Novak had a little more utility overall, but like both those guys, I was just like in love with them on the basketball court. Like every time Novak checked in, you knew he wasn't going to do shit other than sit in that corner and take some three pointers. But I'll be damned if like every time he came in, I was for sure that he was going to hit at least 3 3 pointers in his like 6 minute stint off the bench. And a lot of times he did. I mean, he was a 3 point shooting machine. And then Copeland, I mean, he pretty much always did it in garbage time, but that dude was just like, he was just like an efficiency maestro. Like it was at a time when Melo was at arguably his best as a Knick in 2012-13. And Copeland would go out there and be doing like almost the exact same stuff. And you'd be like, oh my God, like we have another Melo sitting on the bench with dreadlocks sitting down there. Why are we not playing him like 25 minutes a game? Of course, until they would play him major minutes against decent teams and you'd realize like, okay, maybe he's not quite the dude we think he is in garbage time, but he was one of my favorites as well.
Yeah, no, Novak's an all-timer for me. I regret not having him on my list. That's a great find. The discount double check was incredible. And he was just like, he was so perfect for that team because they had like, which is weird for a team built around Melo, but they did, and like a bunch of old dudes, but they just had so many like smart, cagey, like big defenders you could kind of cover up for him. And then offensively, he was just perfect. Like a guy who like literally like only needed the ball for like a second. Like he was like offensively, he was like a really low grade Klay Thompson. Like he was just such a perfect complement to some of the big dudes on those teams. And in fact, those big dudes made my list. Marcus Camby and Kurt Thomas, specifically in that 2012-13 iteration, because obviously Camby had a great run with the Knicks in the 90s. Kurt Thomas was on the Knicks in the early 2000s. And both of them, even when they were like old as shit, they were just solid. Like they would just set screens. They'd make most of their shots. They were smart on defense. They'd communicate. And I think they really embodied like the vibe of that team, which were just like a bunch of guys who I feel like in today's NBA like wouldn't really play all that much, would just sort of be on teams as like mentors, or like maybe if they were on a bad team, like sort of like a Vince Carter, they'd play a little bit. But in 12-13, that was like, it wasn't fully in the era of small ball yet, and they were still you could play a elderly Marcus Camby and a Kurt Thomas for 20 minutes and not get run off the floor. And I just enjoyed them. Like I felt like that 2012-13 team, it was sort of built like a really good like 90s team, and it was just kind of fun to see that type of unit succeed.
Yeah, I totally agree on the Kurt Thomas front. Camby was always frustrating to me that year because he couldn't stay healthy. But Kurt Thomas, I mean, he wound up going down for the season, whatever game it was, like game, I don't know, it was like the 50th game or something like that. But Kurt Thomas gave that iconic moment where he was clearly hurting and Woodson was about to take him out. And then he waved Woodson off as he was going up to shoot free throws, finished the game for the Knicks playing, because at the time he was playing way too many minutes for a dude who's like 42 years old. He's playing like 30 minutes a night for like, you know, half a month because of injuries and stuff. And waved off Woodson, played the rest of the game, and then after the game got diagnosed with a broken foot and was out for the rest of the season. So he played like a whole half of basketball on a broken foot. And I think the Knicks won that game too, if I remember right. It was just, it was iconic, the wave off and the, you know, he made like this funny, like grimace slash smirk at Mike Woodson of just like, nah, like keep me on the court. I'm staying out here. My next favorite one, and this is one that we agreed on, and it feels kind of dirty to say it but he's torn this fan base apart to shreds. I put Frank Ntilikina as one of my guilty pleasures because I like watching Frank play. And I like the things that he brings to a team other than the offense. But for those that are more concerned with like players that can actually shoot the ball and put it in the hoop, I can definitely see not liking him. But he's a guilty pleasure for me. I like watching Frank Ntilikina play, even if he's historically inefficient on offense.
Yeah, he's a delight. I love him. I think his personality is infectious, and I've said it before, I will say it until the day the Knicks trade him, and then probably even after. I think if you gave him a chance on a good team, unless New York and the Knicks just like break him, like he's gonna be like a good rotation guy on a playoff team at some point, and I will stand by that until it's proven not true. And then even then, I will probably stand by it. Another young, in this case, former Nick, who was sort of defined by his defensive ability. I'm going to throw out like rookie or second year, whichever one you want to go with. Iman Shumpert, and this is cheating a little bit because I think everyone sort of loved him, but like I really thought he was going to be like an all-star, just like a monster athlete, like so good defensively, so energetic, and he was just like he's just the type of rookie like you love, because he wouldn't try to do too much, but nearly every contribution he made was positive, and you get those like occasional like flashes where he'd just like dunk on someone, and he was just like, he was like the perfect like luxury piece to mix into, I think when he was a rookie, like the Knicks, was he rookie in 12-13? They were good, I think, either when he was a rookie or a second year. He was just a really nice part of those teams.
Yeah, he was a rookie in 11-12. So it was second year in 12-13. Because his first year, he started under D'Antoni, and D'Antoni was trying to turn him into a point guard that year. Which obviously then that turned into the Jeremy Lin year eventually. But, yeah, I always liked Shum too. I mean, all the way up until the time the Knicks traded him, I was convinced that he was going to be unlocked at some point and turn into this player that he just never, quite frankly, became, which maybe it was because of the ACL injuries or whatever, but at any rate, you know, whatever. It was definitely a guy that I liked, though. I'll just finish off my last two in interest again to the guys that we dislike. I had Kyle O'Quinn, which, again, doesn't even really feel like a hot take. I mostly just liked his personality. His play was very mercurial, you know, but I think I liked his play on the court probably more than most as well. I just liked the things that he brought to the team. And, you know, it just felt like a lot of times his minutes out there were the most productive of any of the centers that the Knicks had at the time. And then my last one is Tracy McGrady. I mean, really, all that he gave the Knicks was one, like, 20-point explosion in his first game as a Knick, and then he just kind of sucked for the last, like, 28 or whatever games after the All-Star break that year that he got traded here, and then never became a Knick again because he obviously was just there to be a large expiring salary. The summer before the Knicks ended up getting Amari and were targeting LeBron and everything. So, but Tracy McGrady's like probably my favorite player ever. So seeing him on the Knicks was super cool. I've even gone as far as buying a Tracy McGrady jersey, which I wore to a meetup one time and got a lot of eyeballs and a lot of like, what the fuck? Like, where'd you get a Tracy McGrady jersey? But yeah, I love the dude. He's like, I always, even though it was short and, you know, not particularly impressive, I always enjoyed Tracy McGrady's small stint with the Knicks.
Yeah, he was. I'll never forget that first game. Like him going back and forth with KD was like. I'll still go back and watch those highlights every once in a while. Like it was surreal, kind of. And obviously he never really came close to approaching that again. But I do always think it's special. Like when a superstar is like able to like rediscover their old form for like even just a couple of minutes or for a game in this case, like on a big stage, like it was awesome. All right. And then my final guy is had a little bit less of an illustrious career. Earl Barron, who most of you probably don't remember, but for a couple of seasons in, I think the late 2000s to the early 2010s, he would be on the Knicks roster or he'd be signed towards the end of the year. He would not play until like game 78 or 79, and then inevitably he would come off the bench and he would score, or he would start and he would score like 14 points and have like 18 rebounds in a game. And I'd always think to myself, why isn't Earl Barron the Knicks' best player for every game for every season? Because he just all he does is produce whenever they give him an opportunity, and obviously he never really replicated that success anywhere else. But I've talked to him before. Sweet guy, and at least in my mind, an all-time Nick.
Yeah, he was the all-time like game 82 guy. We were talking about pre-show, his last game of 2012-13 performance was legendary, where he went out there and almost, if he didn't play all 48 minutes, he played like 45 minutes, and he looked like he was about to die at the end. I also totally remembered that the Knicks signed Quentin Richardson at the end of 12-13 also because of injuries. and then like literally signed him for that last game and then carried him into the playoffs and actually played Key Rich like somewhat meaningful minutes in those two playoff series that year too, which I'd totally forgotten about. So honorary mention to Key Rich on the like list as well. But, my dislike list, I'm just going to run through them quick because I don't want to linger on the dislikes too much, but, and honestly, some of these don't even feel like very hot takey at all. But my first dislike is Enes Kanter, which like, again, I feel like most people disliked his time on the Knicks. And, you know, obviously we talked in the first mailbag about whether we even want to root for him in the playoffs. And I'm fully against rooting for him. Just cause I think he's a cornball and I think he's kind of a jerk off, like at least how he was on the Knicks. A nice enough dude, like off the court, obviously. And, you know, his activism is admirable and stuff, but on the court and his like basketball demeanor, I just don't enjoy it all. And, I just think it's funny. He always puts on that he's a serious guy that cares about winning and this, that, and the other. And, but then, you know, acts like a total clown, you know, half the time otherwise. And it's just, it's weird and it's grating and it's kind of annoying. Derrick Rose is my other one. Just didn't find his brand of basketball to be fun at all. And I feel like most of the people that really supported Derrick Rose on the Knicks were just kind of Derrick Rose, you know, fans that followed him here. Cause it seemed like most of those people dissipated as soon as he was off the Knicks and nobody was really clamoring to get him back, but I didn't really enjoy his time here. Felt like at the time he stalled, Porzingis's development, which was no good. And then lastly, this one might be a little hot taking. He's not a superstar, which was kind of what the question asked, but, I did not like Ron Baker. I was never a fan of Ron Baker's game and everybody seemed to love him. And I thought he was a fun enough dude. Like he seemed funny, but watching him play basketball made me want to like rip my eyeballs out and throw them in a blender and never have them return to my face. Cause I did not enjoy watching Ron Baker play basketball. And I will take that one to the grave, regardless of what anybody tells me.
Well, my only counterpoint to that is one of my best friends from college allegedly made out with a girl that Ron Baker hooked up with. And, that's all I bring up whenever anyone talks about Ron Baker, because I don't really have any other strong feelings about him other than the fact that I thought he was great at Wichita State. And Phil Jackson gave him a ridiculous contract. All right. Players I dislike. I'm with you. I'm with you on Derrick Rose. Not a fan of his game. And the sexual assault stuff, whatever you want to believe on that, that was weird and uncomfortable and not great either. So two reasons to not love Rose there. Pending on what you believe with that, obviously might not be guilty. Anyways, probably shouldn't have brought that up. Carmelo Anthony, another guy who I don't love. Which is weird because I think when we had like our legacy talk about him, like I was sort of defending him and like saying like, you know what, like, I mean, you get like the stats kind of speak for themselves at a certain point, but I always thought I was like outside of obviously 12-13 where like for the most part, like he was perfect and everything about that season was perfect. I think I was generally disproportionately negative about his game. And I just got like his shot selection, like always like really graded me. And like, I thought like he's such like an obviously like talented player. Like if he just built his game around the Morey ball style of like sort of bullying his way to the rim, shooting a lot of free throws, like shooting like a ton of threes. And he was just so mid-range happy. And it was fine because he'd go through stretches where he was like really like elite from those areas. And he had like a little like Dirk Nowitzki where he's like already so good. Like it's worth him taking those shots. But at like the ends of games and in the biggest moments, like I'd be watching games with my dad and I could call out the shots before they were going to happen. I was like, all right, he's going to come off a screen. He's going to run into the corner. He's going to be double teamed. He's going to shoot a fadeaway while he falls out of bounds. It's going to hit off the rim twice and it's going to go into overtime. And that like, I'd always be right about that. So Melo, obviously complicated. Like we've had much longer discussions about him. So I don't want to belabor the point, but, he was a guy who I found frustrating, which I think a lot of Knicks fans did, but I also think there's a subset of Knicks fans that like to have nothing but love for Melo. So I think he's a worthy dislike.
Yeah, potential future guest who I've gone on his show before, Andrew Claudio of Gotham. He's a big Melo guy, so maybe we'll have to have him on sometime. We can have the great Melo debate and see how that goes. Although he will not be swayed from his position, that's for damn sure. But yeah, at any rate, I think we could close off this second segment. So Thank you, Johnny Capps. That turned into a hell of a discussion and a hell of a question there. So we'll come back and we're going to just get into some scenarios of what the Knicks might do should they land KD and Kyrie in free agency like they hope to do. All right. Welcome in, everyone, to the third and final segment of this off-season mailbag. Our first one, we're definitely going to have multiples because, you know, there's going to be more stuff to talk about. But this is like our pre-lottery mailbag. And maybe we can run one right before the lottery and kind of get your guys' opinions about certain lotto scenarios. You guys can run crazy lotto scenarios by us and try to get reactions out of us or something. We'll figure something out. But for now, this is our first off-season mailbag. And our last question of this two-parter comes from Rick Angelo. The Twitter at is at Angelo Rick. He says, if the Knicks get KD and Kyrie, do you think they try to package the young guys for another established player like Bradley Beal? And I guess my answer to that question would be, I think they'll definitely entertain that idea. The tricky part is going to be making math work for a guy like Beal because, so I'll put it this way, like, if they get Zion, there's no way in hell I'm packaging Zion for Bradley Beal because Zion's already a better player than Bradley Beal, I think. And I don't even think that's a crazy thing to say. If it's like a guy that the Knicks took with pick 4 or something like that, like let's say it's like Culver, and then you're talking like, okay, like Culver, Knox, Frank, and maybe you have to throw someone else in there to make math work, then maybe I'm a little more inclined to be like, okay, I could probably talk myself into that because then you build a legit bona fide big 3 and like Bradley Beal, once John Wall went down, Beal like balled out to end the year and clearly showed that he's like, he is a superstar in his own right. If he hadn't already proven that as it was, but, yeah, I would say that like, if it's Zion, that's one of these young guys that you're potentially trying to trade. I don't think that the Knicks are going to do it. I don't think they would trade Zion for anybody short of possibly Anthony Davis. But then again, it's the trick of making math work. And I don't think that like Zion plus like 3 or 4 other of the Knicks young players that they would need to match salary is honestly even a fair trade out for Anthony Davis because I don't think the gap is so huge between even current day Anthony Davis and rookie Zion that you would be willing to take that shot and give up on so many other young players. So it's tricky. I think though, if the player on the Knicks is anybody other than Zion that they draft, then there's a very real chance that if they get Kyrie and KD, that player could be on the move along with a couple of their other younger players, and whatever salary filler they can coddle together to try to go after one of these guys. But I'm curious what your take is on this one, Gavin.
Yeah, I tend to hope that they wouldn't, just because I think inevitably, like, you'd have to give up someone who would be really valuable on next year's team specifically. And I'd almost rather have, like, a well-rounded group of young dudes than, like, a three-headed monster. I mean, obviously, like, I really like Beal. I don't tend to think Washington would trade him, even though it would maybe be smart to. I guess they haven't like hired their new GM yet, so who knows what the rationale there is. But I think even like in the scenario you described, like I think Washington would ask for like whoever the Knicks get in the first round plus like Robinson or if not Trier, like and both Mavericks picks. Like they'd want like, I mean obviously Knox has some promise, but I think they'd want at least one like pseudo established piece, like a guy you know could be really good. And like my gut instinct says, like, unless like the Knicks were, got the second pick and got Ja Morant, I think you'd have to throw Mitch in there. And then at that point, it would become a little bit too distasteful for me. But I am a Bradley Beal fan. Like, I think he's really, really good. And he showed it off last year on a team that just sucked. Like, he was like legitimately like excellent and still like highly efficient despite like playing with a lot of like borderline NBA guys. So he would be a great fit in that group. I think if you're giving up a Mitchell Robinson, or a Zion Williamson, it's sort of a non-starter.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the Knicks would have to give up Mitch to get it done. I think like realistically, if you were looking at a trade package to Washington for him, like if you're throwing them literally like 4 you know, former lottery picks. If you made a deal that was centered around like Knox, whoever you took at like four or whatever, again, like let's use Culver, for example, it was like Knox, Culver, Frank, maybe even Dennis, you know, Dennis Smith Jr., you know, that would almost work math wise. And then you could just, you know, opt in a couple guys or whatever, but you could probably still hold on to like Dotson, Trier, and Mitch and, you know, still have those guys to go along with Beal, Durant, and Kyrie, realistically. And I think that would be a good one. I mean, I would totally take Mitch off the table in talks for Bradley Beal too, because again, that's another guy that like, you got to weigh like the value gained by having a guy in your team that does as much as Mitch does and projects to be as good as Mitch is going to be, who's only making like 1% of the salary cap, which is just like wild. So I think you definitely have to consider that, you know, when you're talking about potentially trading Mitch for anybody. It's just like the immense value that he gives you by being paid only, you know, $1.5 to $2 million for the next three seasons. For a guy who presumes to hopefully be a starter on hopefully a good team as well. So, yeah, I would take him totally off the table in these talks. But I think they could get it done. I'm not trading Zion in any of these deals unless, again, maybe for Anthony Davis. But for the amount of guys that I would have to throw in there to make the math work, I don't even think I would do that, as crazy as that sounds to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's an area where we've, like, It's an intriguing argument. Again, like, you'd have to, like, and then I can't remember. I think I might have been wrong about this in the past. Like, I always say, like, you need Davis to sign right away, and I don't think he couldn't sign an extension right away, could he?
No, I don't think you can now because of CBA rules. But regardless, even if he could, he wouldn't, because he's made it pretty clear that no matter what, he's hitting free agency, because pretty much all of like the top level players do that now because it's more advantageous in many cases, unless they're with like their original team, which is like the case, or not their original team, but it's like the team that they started, that they finished their rookie contract with, I think is how it goes, which was the case with like Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Steph Curry, those guys, and they can sign those like big mega max deals on an extension. But if you're on another team other than the team that you finished your rookie contract with, and like, anybody can feel free to correct me if I'm wrong on that, because I don't have the CBA right in front of me. But I'm fairly certain that if you're on a different team than the team you finished your rookie contract with, you're not eligible for the Megamax extension, and you can only sign like the Megamax contract using your bird rights, which would be the case with Anthony Davis. So even if he could sign an extension with the Knicks after getting traded to them, he would for sure wait until free agency and just max himself out, even if he was going to stay with the Knicks.
Yeah. All right. No, so that kind of, I guess, gives you your answer. Like, you can't trade Zion for like the bet that you're going to convince Davis to stay, even though I think if you had Kyrie and KD, like I'd be tempted to do it, because then that's just like, at least in my mind, like that's almost a guaranteed title in year one, if everyone stays healthy, which is, would be pretty cool. It's certainly an interesting argument. All right, I think that's pretty much all I have to say on this. We went pretty long on this one.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you to Johnny Caps again for that middle question. That turned into a very, very long question. But there's nothing like, you know, waxing about some old players and talking about that. But again, a great round of mailbag questions. So to everybody that submitted questions, thank you so much for doing so. And in the future, I hope that all you guys submit questions to us, because we certainly love hearing from you and love having this level of interaction with everybody with these mailbags.
Okay, so we have one more question
absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. They're the
this
best.
Is from,
I mean, these are my favorite podcasts to do.
Name
all right,
Unicorns
with
Don't
that,
Exist.
We'll wrap up this edition of Locked On Knicks. Remember to listen to us on the Himalaya
Mr.
podcast
Unicorns Don't
app,
Exist.
And we will be back in your feeds early next week, I'm sure. We'll probably have another guest or two for you over the coming few weeks, and we'll come up with some creative stuff in the meantime. Until then, be good, enjoy life, and we'll talk to you soon.
So Gavin, I'll hand this one off to you first, since you, as everybody knows,
I fucked up a lot.
Subjected.
No, that's okay. Well, at least you're taking that blind on Nets. For I never do that. You know what I just do? I look for irregularities.
However long that was. Usually good enough for me. Why don't you? Sometimes I want to hear your thoughts on this first.
Yeah, I'm gonna start. I'm also gonna start doing like the ad ones as we go.
It's a weird thing because I think ideally, like, yeah, you'd want the Knicks to follow the Nets rebuild, but it's only because the Nets ended up with so many good young players.
I'll let you know. I get like there's a selection process. I get like there's a selection process. I'll just let you know and take your temperature if you feel like meeting up for whatever. I'm going to be in Midtown somewhere, I forget. But it just doesn't quite compare to what the Nets have done. I've been there, I've done that. 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 I've done that.
the board, and like they got Caris LeVert late in the draft. They got Jared Allen late in the draft. LeVert looks like he could be an all-star. Allen looks like a really nice starter. D'Angelo Russell they got via trade, and I'm not the biggest D'Lo fan in the world, but obviously, I mean, relative to what they gave up for him, for a guy who made an all-star team at 24, that's pretty amazing. Dinwiddie, if you want to call it second draft or just amazing free agency find, you could say the same thing about Joe Harris. Like, I guess all I'm trying to say is like, I think like the Knicks and Nets were trying to do the same thing. And like for most teams, like the Nets would have been in the same situation the Knicks are right now, just maybe a year ahead. They just hit on so many of these different guys across the board. It gave them a little bit of an avenue to say going into this season, like, you know what, let's try and get some vets. Like, we're not ready to sign stars, but we could bring in like an Ed Davis, a Jared Dudley. And those are guys who can supplement these young pieces. And if it all coalesces, we'll make the playoffs. And that's what ended up happening for the Knicks. I mean, for one, they just haven't been doing it as long. And two, they kind of have the luxury at this point of just swinging for the fences and going for a superstar, like, because they potentially have that interest. And I think, like I'm saying, the Nets have the advantage in terms of the type of talent that they acquired. The Knicks have the advantage in terms of, like, they're not even as well established in terms of, like, up and down roster talent as the Nets are, but they actually have a chance at, like, a Kevin Durant this summer. And I guess the Nets probably think they do, too. But realistically, it seems like he would lean towards going to the Knicks. So that's a long-winded way of saying two different franchises, two different levels of opportunity. I think the Nets have done a fabulous job, but the Knicks have a window of opportunity that the Nets simply don't.
Yeah, I mean, so I think this question is kind of complicated because, like, the Nets are in really, like, year, what, four? Of their rebuild that they started, you know, their sort of own version of like the process. I mean, how long has Atkinson been the coach there? Is this his fourth year? Or is this his third year?
I think it's third season.
Third season. Okay. So this is like their third year of a rebuild. The Knicks are in the first year of a rebuild. So it's almost like apples to oranges. Also the fact that the Knicks had all their own draft picks and the Nets never did. The Nets, you know, every other year for like six straight years didn't have their draft pick because they traded them all in that horrible Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett trade back in the day. So, like, you know, their approaches to rebuilding are different. You know, the Nets were kind of behind the eight ball, and I give them credit for, you know, going out and, you know, taking guys into space in exchange for what draft picks they could get, which turned into like, you know, picks in the 20s and stuff. And, you know, that's how they got Allen. That's how they got LeVert. So that's impressive. And their drafting has certainly been good. I just don't think it's really – you can't really compare it because the Nets literally have never had an opportunity to straight up tank because of pick swaps and, you know, just straight up trading their pick. I mean, there was a period, I think, three straight years, you know, prior to this year where they – had either outright traded their pick or had traded a pick swap to the Celtics. And so that's going to, you know, change your strategy no matter what. And, you know, their strategy essentially was just take guys into space and acquire whatever first round picks we can, like just try to get into the first round some way or another, no matter what. And they managed to do that. And, you know, I give them props for that, but the Knicks, it's different because they've had all their own picks now for the last few seasons. And, you know, naturally then if it, you know, this year, finally they decided like, we're going to just fully throw it in the tank and give ourselves the best shot at Zion Williamson as possible, which they succeeded in doing. I don't think that a top free agent would look at the Knicks and be like, this team is trash. Like, there's no way I would go here, especially when they have the amount of cap space that they do. And also, I only think that, you know, they made certain moves like the Porzingis trade, and which obviously had something to do with Porzingis being unhappy, but they only made moves like that because they're like more or less sure that Kevin Durant is coming and that they really think they have a shot at another free agent like a Kyrie Irving. And, you know, they're kind of just building on that assumption anyway. So I think basically, I guess, like, my whole point is this. I think the general discussion is moot, but I also think that you can't really, because I think the discussion's moot because they're going to get Durant regardless, and someone else is, you know, 90% going to come with Kevin Durant because he's one of the two best players on the planet right now, arguably the best player on the planet. But I mean, even just comparing the way that the two teams rebuilt, it's tough to do so because I feel like if the Knicks didn't have the commitment from Durant this summer, they would probably go about things in more of a Nets-ish way and like a Sixers-type way where they would just keep taking players into space, you know, acquiring picks where they can, doing things of that nature, and, you know, just sort of continuing this rebuild and hoping that they strike it big on some players, then eventually lure a free agent. But I think they've just kind of been given like a, you know, a fast pass to – you know, work that if this is like a Monopoly board or whatever, they just drew a community chess card and got told to advance to go, you know, and, you know, get there right away instead of having to work their way around the board, with the whole Durant thing. So I guess like my answer to this one is I think that they were going about things kind of the same way that the Nets and other, you know, teams that have rebuilt well over the last few years were going about things, but you know, things are just different for the Knicks because they have this, you know, preemptive commitment from Kevin Durant, which not many teams can say.
Right. Yeah. No, I think, I think we're both making pretty similar points on it. The one thing I will say is my favorite podcast the last 2 years, and it's been with James up until this point, has been doing at the beginning of every season, like the Knicks Nets debate. And I like being able to play sort of devil's advocate in terms of like which team has a better position going forward. And the last two seasons, it was like genuinely an interesting conversation because in so many ways, the Nets had everything going for them, but the Knicks could just say, well, you know what, we still have the Garden to theoretically attract the KDs of the world. And more importantly, we have Kristaps Porzingis, who was just more of a blue chipper than anyone the Nets had. And now this season, I just think it's going to be such a boring episode. Is either the Knicks are going to get Kevin Durant and you're going to say like, all right, like enjoy your, like, your seven, like, good players. We'll take KD and Kyrie and roll to the finals or the Eastern Conference finals. Or if the Knicks don't get those guys, then I'd say like the Nets are still like pretty clearly in better position just because, as you put it, they're a little further along. So that'll be a little bit of a shorter episode than what we've had in the past.
I mean, I guess there's also the possibility that, you know, the Knicks get the number one pick, take Zion, and then don't get Durant or whatever, even though I'm fairly certain that Durant's happening based off all the reporting at this point. Like, it just feels foolish to think that wouldn't. But, like, you know, I guess even if the Knicks would end up with just Zion, I'd say that there's a real debate to be had there. And that, you know, similar to what you were saying with Porzingis, where he was the best blue chipper of anybody, you would say that definitely about Zion if they end up with him. But, yeah, it should be – I guess we'll see. It'll be – I think the most interesting thing about that pod will be if we get all four of us on, because they're a two-man show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a hell of a party pod. We get four people on at once. That could be an interesting episode.
Yeah, we'll do. I think it'll get contentious. It's pretty funny because they have I've talked about this before, but like my two of my basically best friends in the world host that podcast, and neither of whom had any broadcasting experience before starting off with Locked On Nets. So, you know, we run a good program here, but they're both, I think they do a pretty good job. But one of them is like very neutral in the Knicks Nets debate because he's like a lifelong Knicks fan. And then the other one, I would say, maybe even more so, I would say is like the Nets equivalent of you, who's like a little bit more like clearly distasteful of the opposite side, which mm-hmm. I encourage. So I think that'd be very clean, and it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it should be a good time. But anyway, yeah, I think we could probably wrap up this mailbag episode. Ran a little longer than we figured we would, but that's okay because we love all these great questions from you guys. We really, really appreciate you all sending these questions, and you know, helping make the show as good as it is. We will certainly lean on the listeners more as this offseason goes along. And there's, you know, not as much to talk about, especially leading up to the lotto. So we may even run an immediately pre-lotto mailbag, maybe ask for like weird scenarios or something for how the lotto order falls and how we might approach it, something along those lines. But we'll think of something cool, and we'll definitely keep trying to bring you guys some cool stuff leading up to the draft lotto. But in the meantime, yeah, thank you guys so much for contributing these mailbag questions, and we will be on with you guys more this week. We got lots of good shows coming your way.